About 5 years ago, we visited Atchison, Kansas to film segments of our documentary during the Amelia Earhart Festival. While we were there, we met two women that would become an integral part of the Chasing Earhart project, working with us on events and helping us gain a sense of credibility in the Earhart historical record. While they both prefer to be behind the camera, current events have now pushed them out in front of everyone as the faces for Amelia's legacy in Atchison and in aviation. On the eve of the grand opening for the Amelia Earhart Hangar Museum in Atchison, they finally sit down with me in a conversation that, for this show, is over 5 years in the making. This is Karen Seberg and Jackie Prejean. As we begin tonight, the Earhart statue, it was finally revealed to the world last year, and she's certainly where she belongs in DC, and you both really went to bat to make that happen. So it must be a great feeling to know that she finally made it to the U.S. Capitol. Jackie, tell us what your thoughts are looking back in retrospect now that it's behind you.
Wow. Well, I think one of the things I said in DC when I talked is that one of the biggest things I felt was relief, because it seemed like I'd been working on it forever and ever and ever.
Well, but 2010 till 2022.
Yeah.
Long time.
Yeah. Part of that is just bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. You know, we finally got her done and then COVID hit. So nothing was happening in the Capitol. So we just had to wait it out. But absolute awe.
Yeah.
At being able to do that. It was a very, very full day, but it was just kind of surreal, really, to think here I am in the U.S. Capitol with all these people that decide what's going to happen in our country, right?
Yeah.
And they all were very gracious. They treated us wonderful. Huge, huge thanks to Senator Moran and his chief of staff, James Kelly, who really nursed me through a lot of it because I didn't know how to get things done in Washington from here. And then Matthew Smith from the Nelson Atkins in Kansas City, who just really helped us get the base that we wanted and meet the criteria of the Capitol. And she is absolutely gorgeous and stands out. People are going to walk in the room and know that's her. And that was what was important to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Karen, what do you think? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, Jackie deserves all the credit because she's the one that led the charge. But Rick Berger and I were also on the committee. And I think what is so exciting to us is that she's the 11th woman in the Capitol. I think the most beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It looks so much like her, and the family was excited. And, you know, one of the things that I think is the most exciting about the day is the Kleppners and the Morrisseys hardly ever had seen each other except at Muriel's funeral. And it was almost like a day for them to get back together.
Yeah, kind of brought the family back together, which was very, very cool.
Yeah,
it really was. So that was exciting. I sat next to a 3-star general, a woman in the Air Force, you know, and she was just the most wonderful person.
Wonderful.
But it was an incredible day. It truly was. And then when we unveiled her twin here at our museum, that was exciting also.
Yeah, it's a stunning statue. It really is. Very worthy. The legacy is more alive now than ever. We'll talk about as much as we can tonight. It's a very exciting time for fans of Earhart and for those that are out there that have championed her legacy for so long. Two of you, of course, are part of that group. I want to ask you both, I don't think we've ever, in all of our off-the-record conversations, I don't think I've ever asked the first question that we ask everyone that comes on the show. So let's sort of start it off properly. Jackie, can you remember the very first time you heard the name Amelia Earhart?
Oh, wow. You know what? I don't think I do. Obviously, the intensity for me has been really since I started working for the festival, which is over 25 years ago. You know, now, I mean, I live a block from our house now. So it's just kind of taken over my life.
As she tends to do. Yeah.
In a good way.
And you know, what's interesting to me, and there were girls my age that remembered Amelia Earhart, but somehow it didn't resonate for me when I was a kid. Mm. And I don't understand why, but I'll never forget when the person who was at the Chamber of Commerce, our marketing guy, said, we have to do this. Her centennial is in 1997, and we have to do this. I started as the event coordinator with Don Huff then, and then became the chair. And well, now it's 2023 and I'm still cranking along. Jackie and I are, but we're starting to mentor some people because Amelia really has taken our life. I mean, she's taken us by storm. So
yeah.
Then my husband wanted to have this plane here, and that was his vision. So all of us are kind of involved in it.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, especially in this audience, will obviously know both your names because, as you mentioned, all the work you've done, you know, not only in the festival, but just keeping Amelia's, you know, legacy alive and thriving. You've been doing this for a long time. You're both really pillars of the celebration of everything that sort of Amelia stood for now. It's like a monumental role that you are in now. I mean, and now as you talk about sort of passing the torch and kind of pushing it down, this has had to be like an evolution for you, right? I mean, can you expand a little bit on that?
It has been an evolution. And my husband met the woman who restored the Lockheed Electra 10E in the 80s when she came with Muriel Morrissey.
Yeah.
Muriel Earhart Morrissey. And that became his mission, that he was going to get that plane here.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. And then when she couldn't fly anymore and decided to sell it, we got her here.
Yeah.
For me, I'm just so proud of what has happened here. We wanted our museum to be state-of-the-art, kind of like a mini National Aeronautical Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd even had people come in here and say that. The vision my husband had, and then Jackie and I have taken on the life of that, because the festival is a very different thing. And mm-hmm. and I would like to say something to you, Chris,
yeah.
because here in 2018, you brought an incredible group of people here.
Yeah.
And that has helped us with
tremendously.
Sammy from Purdue.
Yeah.
Was so helpful getting photos for us.
Awesome.
And gave us those photos at a very reasonable price.
Yeah.
You're familiar with Getty Images.
I am. They can get expensive.
Yes.
Yes.
So we tried very hard not to use very many Getty images.
Yeah.
Sammy was incredible.
She was wonderful at Purdue.
We met her. I met her for the first time at your symposium.
It was tremendous help just introducing us to a lot of Earhart people that we had not had the opportunity to visit.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really what I love to hear. That I love that Sammy's another really powerful woman in the Earhart community, you know, research legacy side, doesn't matter. Like, she's just Purdue is such a big deal. And yeah, she'll hopefully be back on the show soon for like another conversation. But Jackie, hearing you talk about sort of how this all started for you, obviously you wear many hats. I've experienced that firsthand. You're sort of doing everything that you can. You have your hands in everything for the festival. Did you ever think that when you got involved in the festival way back when, that it would become this big of a deal in your life and take over this much of your life?
No, Chris, it was a part-time job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, she knows me. So I pulled her in as a board member, and the rest is kind of history.
Yeah.
There are only 5 board members, but truly Jackie and I, Rick Berger's son, Reed, is on our board, and he was the manager of the build of the building.
Yeah.
And then Jackie and I took on
pretty much everything else.
I guess I have never experienced what it took to approve every bit of
everything,
you know, everything,
every word, and the funny, every picture.
We had to, every word, every picture, every drawing, we had to approve it as a board. And then they give us the engineering.
That's
drawings,
when it got a little scary.
And then we went, oh yeah, we approved
looks
that.
Great.
Looks great. You know, we knew what to do with photos and text and the way it looked. But boy, when they started to show us the engineering, we had to approve that too.
We're just a couple of weeks out from the grand opening ceremony as we record this tonight. Karen, I remember having conversations with you while you were acquiring Muriel, while you're going through that process. And then you're sort of telling me then there's a light at the end of the tunnel. There's an end game for all of this. Like, we have a finality here. Now you're there. Like, we're, you know, like I said, we're recording this just a few weeks, you know, out from it. Is there any sense of vindication, I guess, for you, for lack of a better term, in all of this? Like, you finally seen it through. It's done.
You know, that's an interesting question, but there are people who have question us, like, you really think this is going to be cool? Mm-hmm. Do you really think this is going to be anything?
It's never going to happen.
Nobody's going to come.
Nope, going to come.
You're not going to be able to raise the money. It's a $17 million project.
Mm.
What I did learn, though, Chris, is I love to give money away and I hate to ask for it. That's what I learned.
Yeah.
That part is not fun. And we had some consultants that were incredible. We had some consultants that weren't good,
mm-hmm.
but we had 2 or 3 at the very end that it were
incredible help
because they understood the aviation industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of easy when you're in a town and you're raising money for a YMCA because everybody wants that to happen.
Yeah.
But when you start going to talk to FedEx and Lockheed and Garmin
and Bombardier,
Boeing, you know, it's something that I don't have the expertise for. And what it did for me is go, how did Chris Williamson get all these people here in 2018? Because I mean, how do you get those people to know that you are legit?
For real.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
good point.
You know, and raising money for a museum that is a startup.
A lot of it's still a dream.
Yeah.
It's hard because they're going, well, show me the money. Where, you know, where is it? So yeah, there is some vindication, I think, for all of us that are on the board and the other people who worked hard with us.
Yeah.
Because that was a lot of money to raise.
Yeah.
You know, we thought we were going to build the inside of the museum for $5 million. Mm-hmm. And it took 6.8. But you know, if we hadn't done the 6.8 and kept fighting for it, that wouldn't be the same museum.
Yeah.
It we just wouldn't be. The lighting would have been different. You know, everything would have been different. And so yeah, it is kind of vindication. We did it. And there's still some naysayers going, yeah, but nobody's going to come. Well, we've had people from Kentucky and New York City fly in and Australia and
we
all over.
We had a couple drive down from Nebraska today.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Absolutely. I have no doubt. And Jackie, we're talking about, you know, Karen's just listing off all these, well, both of you were listing off these monumentally large companies, organizations that came in and supported the museum, the building of the museum and everything. What, let's turn that around a little bit. Like, what does that say about Earhart's legacy, though, that, you know, in 2023, you know, she is obviously, people are reaching out and they're saying, yeah, we'll put our money where our mouth is. Like, this is a really worthy cause. And she's a really worthy recipient of that cause ultimately.
Right. Well, I think there's recognition still today of what an influence she can be on young people, but especially young women. There's also such a need in the aviation industry today. They all agree that whatever anybody can do to help them encourage people to enter that part of society, whether it be a pilot or whether it be an engineer or whether it be mechanic or, you know, if you've flown at all today, you know, they need everything. I think that having the right people get to the right people and truly explain what we're doing, because any of them that came here were blown away. You know, Garmin said no to us. Nope, not interested. Until we got a couple of the younger people that were high enough up in Garmin that flew an airplane up here and walked in and said, oh my gosh, yes, we want to be part of this.
Yeah.
It's like when we're trying to get the Pioneering Achievement Award person, you know, it's just getting through to that person and, and you have to talk to the right person and tell them your story. And then it's selling itself. To watch those kids today, there were 70 kids here and they had a blast.
Yeah.
They had a great time.
And they were third and fourth graders and they were in the museum for 2.5 hours. That's unbelievable.
That's a long time for
because
that.
Because third graders are pretty young and it was amazing how much fun they had. Yeah. I mean, some of them in the VR even got to Paris and I'm going, I haven't gotten to Paris yet. I don't understand this. And they're girls. Yeah. It was girls. It was, and I'm going, okay. That's, I think, something that I'm in awe of is her, Amelia's ability to spur people to dream.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she was a suffragette, for goodness sakes. I mean, she, it wasn't just about flying. It was about being a mechanic. It was about being a fashion designer. It was about being a nurse. All these things she did that people really don't know about until they start to read about or come to the museum and find out she wasn't just a pilot.
You know, one of her quotes, as a woman should and can do anything a man can do. Still a lot of that battle going on today, right?
Yeah.
So it's still very relevant.
Karen, you talked a little bit about the process of acquiring Muriel. I know that's a very lengthy process, so we won't be able to get into all that tonight, but this really all begins and it's centered around, you know, really a couple of things, some of what you've been talking about tonight, but this doesn't happen without the plane, right? So the Lockheed Electra 10E, the very last one, we'll get to that in a bit, maybe if we have time, but take us back to that beginning. I mean, when did you know, when did the switch flip when you knew like, okay, we're going to get this plane, like it's going to happen and it's all going to unfold the way we wanted it to?
A lot of people helped with that.
Yeah.
And I must be honest that when James Norton and I flew out to San Diego, we weren't really sure until we signed on the dotted line that we would get the plane, because it was hard for this person to give that plane up. It was like her baby.
Yeah.
I was the adoptive mother. She was the birth mother. It was a 30-year process. And so I can't believe we got it done, to be honest with you. I'm just glad that my husband was able to see it get here, because truly it was a vision of his and hers to get it here.
Yeah.
When she got Lyme's and MS and she couldn't fly from Ley, New Guinea to Howland Island, that was the time to sell it. So, and without that, you're right. She is the centerpiece of the museum.
Yeah.
She's the only one left. This one came off of the line as number 2 of 14, and Amelia's was 12 or 13.
Yeah, wow.
This was the fastest machine at the time, airplane at the time, the one that could go the highest. And that's why Amelia picked it.
That's something that we should harp on a little bit. This is number two. This is early in the run of the production. This is one step away from the original Lockheed Electra Tinny, obviously. So it's a big one. I mean, just to have it, even if you didn't have Earhart tied to it in any way, shape, or form, it's a big one, historically speaking.
Yeah, it's still a big deal.
Yeah.
Right. It is. And because there were only 14 made, mm-hmm. I mean, there were 149 tens made, but only 14 of them had the 1340 Wasp engines on. Mm-hmm. I am told that they are different in the guts of the plane also, that there are other ways to tell the A from the E. If you looked at the plane today and you looked at, let's say, Linda Finch's plane, which is an A that she retrofitted with 1340 engines, they look the same.
Yeah.
But there's little things I know about that are different, even now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Little secrets in there.
Little things, little Easter eggs. Jackie, let's talk a little bit about some of the exhibits that surround Muriel. I mean, there's 14 exhibits, if I'm not mistaken. They're highly interactive. These are really one of a kind, one in a million exhibits. Tell everybody that's listening, there will be listening to this, a little bit about those exhibits.
What we do a lot of, we use a lot of Amelia's words mm-hmm. to tell the story and to just try to use her life and her words to encourage and inspire. And so when you get inside the museum, the first exhibit is all about her childhood, you know, and the famous story about going to the World's Fair and when they were kids and they couldn't ride the roller coasters because they were girls. Yeah. Well, that's the most ridiculous thing she'd ever heard of in her life. So when they came home, she decided to build her own roller coaster.
And she crashed.
She did.
So we have an interactive computer that you can pick the box you want to use. You can grease it how much ever you want to. You pick the slant and you build your own roller coaster. And most people crash. It's fun to watch. And then we actually have a roller coaster, a small
model
roller coaster built that you can crank and watch a roller coaster. And I think that the part that's so interesting about the museum too is it's a lot of fun. It's cool stuff, but they're also, every exhibit is tied to STEM in one way or another. So this exhibit, the thing that I think is the coolest is that it talks about the endorphins in our brain and why, Chris, are you scared of roller coasters? And I love roller coasters, right? What's different between us? What makes us think so differently about that? And then it explains how a roller coaster works. What makes it?
The centrifugal force.
Right. What makes it work like that? So as much fun as you're having, you're also learning a lot.
Yeah.
Also, and you're learning about Amelia's life and things that she did and things that she loved to do. We've talked about the plane and Clark and I spent some time out here one day kind of guesstimating, and we think there are about 85,000 rivets on the outside of that airplane. So we have an exhibit that you can actually have a contest. Two people can have a contest and see how fast you can rivet with rivets, because you have to be precise, but you have to be fast as well.
Yeah.
So just everything is interactive. Everything is hands-on. And we've laughed because the kids love it. And kids, you don't have to worry about hands-on.
Yeah.
But adults, you have to go in and say, it's okay to touch. You can go ahead.
Yeah.
You can touch that. You can move it. It's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things about the museum, when the people were writing text for us of what we wanted, one of the ladies actually was part of the King Tut exhibit that went places. So, you know, really incredible people. And she actually said to us, you realize how unique your museum is. And we went, well, we know it's Amelia Earhart, but she said, no, that's not what I'm talking about. There are lots of STEM museums and there are a lot of history museums. Never do they put the two together.
Mm.
They're always one or the other. And yours has both history and STEM. So it is extremely unique.
Yeah.
I saw that happen today with third and fourth graders. You know, they were listening to Amelia's real voice off of the aluminum, they're called platinum, but aluminum records, listening to her voice. And then they're turning around and they're dressing up like a career because they're trying to decide, do they want to be a pilot? Do they want to be a mechanic? And what I love about it is it's a lot of compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what Amelia and all the other pilots would have worn in her day. Now, this is what you'd look like as a pilot. We're trying to get them to want to be pilots or to at least dream their dreams. Mm.
We talked a lot about STEM already tonight. What I know this museum will do, and you're talking about it tonight, but it's going to continue pushing that fact that Earhart was a champion in STEM before we ever had the trendy acronym. You know, she's in Purdue in the 30s. It's a natural evolution, I think, of her involvement with Purdue and sort of all the things she cared about there and all the things she may have done, you know, had she returned from the world flight. Jackie, when this is all getting laid out, how important, you know, is that factor, like incorporating that into every fabric of the museum? museum. She's not just a pilot. She didn't just break aviation records. This is a museum that represents all of the things that Earhart really loved and really would have championed in her day.
Right. And I think including the fact that she wasn't afraid to fail.
Yeah.
She did fail. She picked herself up and started over again, right? She wasn't going to quit no matter what. And I think that's important for kids to understand too. You know, it's okay to fail. Mm. It's okay if things don't work out the first time you try. You try again. You know, a lot of us as adults, we've done that in our lives without even knowing it and without even realizing it. But for little kids to understand that it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, maybe mom is on her second career or dad's on his second career because things didn't work out. And it's okay. It's okay. But find something you love and go for it, because that's what she did. You know, if you're willing as a woman in the late 20s to drive a gravel truck, to buy an airplane, you do just about anything to reach your goals. And so it's okay to do that. Be determined.
Yeah.
Another thing that we're really stressing for at-risk kids, and it's really important. People think that Amelia was rich and she had everything was great for her. Well, when she was with George, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Okay. But we're stressing to kids that are at risk that you can do it. Her dad was an alcoholic. They moved around constantly, and the most stable place she was with her grandparents, you know, during school time.
Yeah.
She had to quit college to help the family because they didn't have enough money. So it isn't like everything was all peachy keen for her. Their parents divorced, the same things that we're all dealing with today, you know, all the same problems. And I think it's so important that kids that think they can't. We want people to know that.
Yeah.
She kept working no matter what.
That's a really strong point that's rarely made on this show, actually. Okay, well, let's recap a little bit. Atchison now has the Amelia Earhart Birthplace Museum, which is one of my favorite museums. It's the home of the International Forest of Friendship, which people listen to this show, I lovingly refer to that as like the Amelia Earhart Hall of Fame. you know, we've got it's true, right? And we, you know, we've got the annual festival that's been going on, as Jackie mentioned, for 25 years now. And now we have this remarkable addition in the Amelia Earhart Hangar Museum. It's now become impossible to ignore what Atchison's stance is, what its stamp is on Earhart's legacy. Karen, was that always the goal here? I mean, to make sure that, like, if you're a fan of aviation, of STEM, or of Earhart herself, the disappearance, the legacy, whatever it is, Atchison has to sort of be the first place that you make that stop.
Oh, I agree. And even in our museum, we have a little area that talks about six of the theories, six of the most interesting and plausible
publicized theories.
So you can even vote which is your. After you go through it with a for and against, then you get to vote.
Yeah, Irene Bolam. Everybody who knows, that's it for me. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Then you look up Amelia Earhart, Irene Bolam, and then you really get into some mysteries.
Listen, for people who are listening, don't do that. Okay, don't do that. Trust me, if you do that, it'll be a hole that you'll never be able to dig yourself out of, I promise you. Don't repeat my mistakes. Okay. I'm only going to address a disappearance one time tonight, and this is the moment. So we've got multiple active investigations going on all over the world pertaining to the investigation of the disappearance of Earhart and Noonan, including one very interesting situation in Buca that's unfolding behind the scenes right now.
Correct.
As we speak, if the plane hypothetically is discovered tomorrow, what happens to the legacy? In your opinion, we'll start with you, Jackie. Does it even matter at this point?
I'm not sure that it really matters at this point, because I think that in my mind, the mystery has helped keep her story alive.
Yeah.
The story has been so well told by so many authors in so many different ways that I don't think it'll make a huge difference. I personally, you know, when Bob Ballard was here before he went to Nicomaruro, I said, you know, Bob, I don't want you to find her. And he said, well, I'm going to find her one way or another. And I said, I don't think she's at Nicomaruro. And he said, well, if she's not there, she's somewhere else. Yeah, so
that's true.
Yeah, he was very pragmatic about it.
He was, but he did say he saw the same rock.
Yeah, I said, I looked at that same. He even used a bad word. Looked at that same damn rock six times.
She's not there.
Yeah.
That's what he said. But Rick Gillespie doesn't want to hear that. I know that. I know he doesn't.
Yeah, well.
I don't think it'll make that big a difference. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. You know, interestingly enough, we went a few years ago, we went to Oshkosh to the big fly-in, and we heard a wonderful gentleman speak, and he did a short maybe 45 minutes or so, went kind of through all the scenarios. And of course, that room is full of mostly pilots. And at the end, he said, all right, I want everybody to tell me what you think happened. And I would say about 98% of that crowd said she ran out of gas and she went in the ocean.
Yeah, sure.
That's what happened. It was just interesting. That's kind of what I think happened. But but it's always interesting to read all this stuff. And when somebody asks me about all the authors and everything, I always said it was great fun. That for years, they came to the festival. And I always said they would cuss and discuss. That's what they did.
That's a wonderful way to say it.
When Rick came, we had to say, now the Amelia Earhart Society, you behave yourself.
We threatened them.
We threatened them. Be nice. You behave yourself because, you know, we're all searching for her.
Well, I think that's why we've gotten along so well over the years, too. It's because, I mean, I'm basically in the same position you guys are. I mean, I will give my color commentary. And, you know, of course, that's what we've been known to do on Vanished and, you know, all that stuff. But yeah, at the end of the day, we should all be having the same goal, right? I mean, I think that's, you know, ideally what's going on here. And so I've talked to so many people that just believe that she just, you know, even Tom Detweiler and a lot of those people that worked on the Titanic and stuff said it was just the sum of a lot of little things that went wrong that morning. And it happens. I mean,
lost her 200-foot antenna, trailing antenna. There's several other things. But you know what? I agree with Jackie. She is so much more than a pilot.
Yeah.
That I don't think her legacy will ever go away. It's interesting. I had a guy from NPR ask me the question, what stands out to me about Amelia? And I will tell you that one of the things that has stuck with me that I didn't even know about till we started doing the history and writing all this, when she was in the Powder Puff Derby, she came in third. But the reason she came in third was one of her friends was in trouble.
That's right.
And she stopped to help her. And I think the compassion that's in her, you know, even though she was this big adventurer, the compassion is what sticks out for me. So I probably have a different look than some, but that really struck me that she could not win because she was helping somebody.
You know, they were great rivals, but they were also such good friends.
Yeah.
That it was important to take care of each other at the same time.
Yeah.
Yep. She's so much more than a pilot.
Absolutely. That's another thing that I think people should probably rewind and go listen to again, just that last minute or so, because that's never really been discussed on the show, you know, from the standpoint of compassion and kind of, you know, who she was as a person. I've talked about it sort of ad nauseum on other things, but not to that effect. So that's really great. Yeah. I mean, on the eve of the opening, I guess I only have one final question for both of you before we wrap up tonight. Jackie, we'll start with you. What do you hope people gain when they visit and experience this museum for the first time? What do you hope people come away with?
First of all, I want them to have fun.
Yeah.
And hopefully learn something about Amelia, but maybe also about themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Come away from here with all these exhibits, because everyone is so different and touches a different part of your mind and a different part of, and hopefully one of them touches somebody's soul. Learn something about yourself and maybe encourage yourself, whether you're a kid or whether you're an adult, to continue to follow your dream.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, my dream right now is to travel. And that's important to me. Obviously, Amelia was all about that, right? Keep going, keep moving. So just learn something about yourself as well as learning about Amelia, but have fun and enjoy what's here and then buy something in the gift shop.
Yes, please do.
Trust me. She is the retail expert.
Yes. Go buy something. You know, support the museum.
I think what's blowing people away that are here and come in here, and it's if they've traveled from New York City or they're from Doniphan County, like today with these young kids and the parents going, wow, we had a guy come in as a pilot and he said, this rivals the National Smithsonian Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what? And he said, no, I know it's a lot smaller, but what you're doing is exactly what that museum does. So if we can do that for people, it's a success.
Yeah. And I will tell you that the exit movie, I still sometimes go in and watch it before I leave here because I absolutely love it. It's just full of encouragement for everybody to be who they want to be.
Dream your dreams.
As we exit tonight ourselves, tell everybody, where can people find more information about the Hangar Museum, about Atchison? Plug anything that you want to plug tonight.
Amelia Earhart HangarMuseum.org is the website. There's also a Facebook page, and we're very visible on Instagram. As well.
Mm-hmm.
Mackenzie Burghardt is doing a fabulous job with social media. So we're out there all the time. And
all the times and the prices and
times, prices. You know, we're open Wednesday through Sunday and gearing up for the big. We will be closed that week before the grand opening, though, to try to make sure we got our stuff together.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
Well, and there's some things that they're correcting.
Yeah,
that they want a few little things. So that we're going to be closed just the week before.
Yeah.
But other than that, we're wide open and people can come in and see us. We'd love to see them.
All right. Well, I people are listening to this. They know what I think about it. And I can't wait to experience it, you know, fully for the first time. April 14th is the day, the grand opening. Check out AmeliaEarhartHangerMuseum.org for all the details regarding that ceremony and the museum itself. We'll have links to everything we talked about tonight in the show notes for this episode. As I said at the top of the conversation, this has really been a long time coming for the show. So Karen and Jackie, thank you so much for doing this and spending time with me tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks, we appreciate
Chris.
You.
We appreciate Thanks, Chris. You. You've been very helpful.
This is Chris Williamson, and thank you for listening to this episode of Chasing Earhart. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media, where we post each new episode as it airs, news, show information, and group discussion. Go to facebook.com/ChasingEarhart, and on Twitter and Instagram, search the handle at Chasing Earhart. Reviews are crucial to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please head to Apple Podcasts to rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Your editor and host for Chasing Earhart is me, Chris Williamson. The show is produced by my wife, Vanessa Williamson, with music by Dane Jarris Schmidt. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Madhouse Films Incorporated. Madhouse Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All clips and audio used in the podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of historical entertainment and education, and no infringement is ever intended. Chasing Earhart is an exclusive trademark of Madhouse Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Madhouse Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Chasing Earhart is a Madhouse Films production. All rights reserved.